This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
iFanboy Pick of the Week Podcast, Episode 17.
Hi, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week Podcast. This is Connor Kilpatrick alongside Josh Flanagan.
Hello, and you're not alongside anybody.
Well, in spirit I am.
In spirit, indeed. Also, sorry, I start off negative.
The less snarky Ron Richards.
Hello.
And here at iFanboy, we read a lot of comics, we like comics, we enjoy good comics, and we have one person every week pick the best comics they read, and we're going to talk about it. And this week that was Josh Flanagan.
That is correct. I bought some books. I thought it was going to be a bigger week than it was, but apparently my new shop let me down a little bit.
So the luster has come off the new relationship?
Well, of the five books I'd planned to buy, they only actually had three of them. But the thing was that one of the books, he said, Neverwhere, which is the Neil Gaiman Vertigo adaptation. He said people were coming in all day and buying multiple copies of it, and I was like, really?
Wow.
Yeah, I'm guessing that that's not like a collector thing. It's more like other people like that who don't
crazy Neil Gaiman fans.
Yeah, and so like they're buying them for their friends or their whatever. But I guess it happened more than once. So there was none of those left. And then the other one was the Tom Balin book that was on that we put on the site, the I Heart Marvel,
right?
Which I was going to pick up, but apparently it sucked.
Yeah, you didn't miss much.
It was. Okay. First of all, I didn't realize it wasn't going to be the book we talked about on the site. So I was looking for the story by that dude.
Yeah.
whose name I don't remember. And the art by the guy from Invincible. But
Tom Balin and Corey Walker?
Yeah, that was not the case. It was pretty bad.
Well, the art was by Corey Walker and the writing was by Tom Balin. It just wasn't that story.
Really?
Was it?
Yeah, the whole thing. I mean, look at the back page. It's writer Tom Balin, pencil Corey Walker. And it was Corey Walker doing pencils.
The Wolverine story was Daniel Way, writer, and Ken.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm confused then.
And the second story was Peter Milligan.
Right.
It was three stories, and none of those were the people.
None of these were these.
So my pick of the week was Jonah Hex number 4.
Oh, all right, sorry.
We got off. Anyway, I didn't have a lot to choose from, though. And I really liked this, but we've kind of talked about this book before. But it was more of the same kind of good stuff. This was a one singular story. Like they've all been so far, and I wrote this on the website that I'm realizing that this isn't a historical account. This isn't like a journalistic account of the things of Jonah Hex. It's like a comic book version of telling a story around a campfire or a legend that gets passed around. You know, that kind of old tradition of, you know, like there's tall tales and he's doing things that the normal men can't do. And it's just it's got this little feel that's slightly off from. They're not trying to capture, you know, that vertigo feel of desolation and you know despair and all that. And they're not trying to capture the high action G.I. Joe episode of like what a Marvel comic would be. It's got its own sort of Western feel, which is very unusual, I guess, in comics today.
Especially if a mainstream comic.
It is. It's a DC. It's not even on Vertigo. It feels like it should be, but it's not. And you know, it's the first thing I said when I opened it up is I was like, "Oof, that art looks really good." Like it's really like it's just all appropriate. Everything in the book is appropriate for the book, and it's neat to see a book that that inhabits sort of the space that it has to exactly. You know, if this had been, you know, like Battle Chasers art, it wouldn't fit obviously, but.
Everything was appropriate to the story.
Yeah, like the art is a little bit antiquated. It's a little bit old-fashioned, but it doesn't feel like it's like an old reprinted story that doesn't feel modern. It does feel relevant and everything, but very good. And you know, this is just another one of those, you know, cowboy out for revenge. Somebody tells him he's doing the wrong, you know, doing the wrong thing, so he corrects it and shoots all the bad guys. And that's what's happened in every episode so far.
But it's all been entertaining.
It is. It's all very entertaining, and it's a kind of a quick read, and you know, it's a simple sort of morality play, and but it's a fun time, and you know, it's certainly a different thing than a lot of the other stuff that's going on right, anything else that's going on right now.
I was just interested in something you wrote on the website about how you didn't really get Westerns until you were 26.
I'd say that's about right. I mean, it's one of those things where.
What did you mean by that?
Well, if you go to school. We're a place where, like, if you go to a film school or a place where a lot of people are paying a lot of attention to that kind of thing, especially people who are into, like, film historians are always into Westerns because they comprise what is the sort of the foundation of a lot of American movie making, I think. You know, the Western was the first great American movie art form that we had, you know, along with, like, gangster movies and whatever. But I think the Western – and I didn't really like them for a long time because they seemed overly simplified – and, you know, there is that black and white to them, but there's something else that I just didn't appreciate for a really long time. It wasn't like one of those things, like, I loved them as a little kid. I actually didn't appreciate them until I was older.
Mm-hmm.
And Unforgiven was the example I used that everybody says is the greatest movie in the world. And the first time I watched it, I thought, nothing happened in that movie. What was the point of that? And then later, you know, as I got to be more egg-headed, I guess, you know, I understood what it meant. That movie's a deconstruction of the Western. Whereas this book actually is not. This is a straight up Western. There's good guys and bad guys, and everything is clear cut, and the good guy does the right thing, and he survives all the odds. And there's something sort of fun and pure to all that, that you don't get with a lot of modern comic books. Are, you know, they're steeped in the gray area. What's right? What's wrong? What's everything? And this is just that sort of clean, straight, refreshing, sort of straight ahead story. And it's fun sometimes. It's not fun all the time, and it's not fun with all genres. But it's good with this. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I think you got to have that with Westerns. Well, you don't know. That's not even true. I think it's the Western plays very easily into the black and white morality tale. You can obviously have great Westerns that fall in the gray area, the Searchers being a prime example of that. But
right.
You're right. And so you would think comics would be rife with black and white, but these days it's more... You know, the readers demand more of a gray area to their comics.
Yeah.
This is sort of a throwback to the black and white.
We know Jonah Hex. At the same time, it does it without feeling antiquated. It doesn't.
But the other interesting thing is Jonah Hex is the good guy, but he's terrifying looking.
He is, and he's a bounty hunter, and nobody likes him.
Which is, you know, he's not riding in with a white hat and looking like Montgomery Cliff. He's got some horrible skin flap that Josh just wants to cut with a scissor.
Can't you just cut that? Can't you just, if you don't look at this, and I'm guessing a lot of people haven't, do you know what happened to Joe? It looks like he got burned or something, but he's got like this little bit of skin over on the right side of his face that sort of connects his upper and his lower lips, and it's always there, and I don't know why, but just, you know, he's a tough guy. He could take it. Just snip that thing.
Ugh.
I think.
It's grisly, but it's a good book. It's a really solid book.
Mm-hmm.
I have fun reading it every month. So that's the most important thing.
Exactly, and if you're reading, it's the other one right now, Loveless, it's a hell of a lot simpler than that. So it's sort of, you don't have to work as hard.
That's true.
Yeah, but
I'm guessing
but,
you didn't read that, Ron.
No.
I bet Ron's asleep right now.
Yes.
There's no Cyclops in it, I'll give you that. And so far there has been no superpowers of any kind, but...
I don't think we're going to see any.
Ron, I mean, Connor, you know more of the history behind this, don't you? I mean,
well, little.
He comes from old DC books. I mean,
he's an old character, but I mean, I would expect that at no time you will see a superhero power in any of this.
Did he show up in like Crisis? He did, didn't he? Not the new one, the old one.
No.
Crisis on Infinite
I don't
Earth.
Believe so.
Really?
Well, I think there was one point where Jonah Hex went to the future, and he was, you know, when the Western stopped selling, they propelled him into a sci-fi arena where he like time travels and
I know
that,
he
that may
of
have
exists.
Yeah.
This
that may
like
have popped up, but I don't remember that happening.
Yeah. Seems like they've taken him back to his roots here before any of that happened, so he's just sort of the legendary gunfighter of the past.
Right.
Hey, do you know who did the cover for this? I can't read the signature on it. It's a really beautiful cover, though.
It's not in the credits?
Cover by Howard Chaykin.
Oh, oh wow, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're getting one of this. One of those books where every month somebody else does the cover, and they've all been really nice. This one's particularly nice. Really nice coloring.
He's like one of those names where you wish he did more, but, you know.
I think he's got a lot of other stuff going on.
Yeah,
he does movie stuff, Hollywood stuff.
Yeah, like he does TV and Hollywood. Wasn't he doing Mutant X and all that stuff?
Right.
So yeah.
We didn't say it was good Hollywood stuff.
No, we didn't.
Ron, what did you read since you've been left out of this conversation?
No, trust me, I don't mind at all. You guys can talk about your Cowboys and Indians all you want. I had a mediocre week. You know, I bought a stack of books, and nothing really stood out as awful, but nothing really stood out as great. Although, you know, the Ultimate Extinction's in full swing with at the helm of Warren Ellis, which I know is, you know, always a hot topic.
Actually, this week I picked up Next Wave, which I had read somewhere had sold out, and I think I read somewhere else that it was really good, because I kind of flipped through it at first, and I was like, it looks nice, but I didn't want to buy another one of those books, because I kind of knew what to expect from them. And so I went and I picked it up, and the art is by Stuart Immonen, who's apparently completely changed his style from what I remember. He used to do very sort of
photorealistic, yeah.
Really, you know, sort of interesting. And now it's like this, I'm not going to call it an anime style, but it's definitely more cartoony.
It's completely different.
It's very Powers-esque.
Yeah, more of an animated style. It's completely different from what I used to. I really like the art, actually. I love art like this. But the book is just, it has nothing to do with any of my Warren Ellis griping in the past, but every time I read his books, they're just full of people talking really tough and using creative language about beating other people up. And that's like the whole thing. I'm going to rip his ass out through his teeth, and just like his way is to just sort of try to be clever. It's just every page is trying to be clever. And every book that I've read from him feels exactly the same. And I don't know why people are still falling for it or they like it, but I thought it would get kind of old by now.
Well, I mean, I honestly think that this one is just going to flop in their face because it – I mean, you like the art. I'm not a real fan of it. I didn't think it was that great. The story was it was like take a little bit of Thunderbolts and a little bit of Authority and push it all together.
Yeah, you think the story is kind of really feels phoned in.
Yeah, you know, it's like okay, a lot of reluctant heroes who don't want to be working together, and okay, let's get a B-lister like the female Captain Marvel and Machine Man, who Machine Man was the only character in the book that I liked that I liked the approach with it.
Yeah, but now he's angry. My robot brain needs beer. What does that mean?
But the thing is that like if you want to be creative with your language and you want to curse, then just fucking curse. Don't say APSA and like little skull and crossbones lootly instead of APSA fucking lootly. Just say it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Throw a Max title on, throw a Max label on it if you have to, but just don't have the balls to do it.
I agree.
And it's almost like he's trying to be all risque Warren Ellis, but in the safe Marvel world, and it's gonna completely flop in his face. And the
paycheck.
And the crap about it selling out. I mean,
that means nothing.
Yeah, that means absolutely nothing because you know.
I know, and that didn't make me pick it up. But
it's sold out at a wholesale level.
Sold at a wholesale level. If you look at the press releases Marvel sends out when every one of their books sell out, they never mention how many they printed.
Mm-hmm.
So I can print 20,000 copies of a comic book and tell you it's sold out and be like, oh my god, it's sold out, and you're really impressed. You didn't know that I only printed 20,000.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just.
But it's still, even then, it just doesn't mean they sold it to the readers.
Right. Yeah.
It could be stacks and stacks at the comic store.
Right. Which there probably are. Go to your local comic store and see how many are left on the shelf. You know.
Do you know what this feels like? It feels like a Guy Ritchie movie, but not quite as inventive. Like, it's just everybody posing and being tough and using funny phrases, and it's like, it is kind of cool at first, but geez, it's been like 10 years now, and this is the only trick I'm seeing coming out of there.
Yeah, I didn't even think it was cool at first. I mean, it just...
I enjoyed it. The first time I read The Authority or whatever, I was
I thought you meant with this book specifically.
No, I just... No, but I mean, literally, like, he's ripping his spine out. It's gross. Ha-ha, it's funny. And it's still happening. It's just watered down now. And the big joke in this is that they fight Fin Fang Foom. And, of course, the big joke about him has always been that he has little purple underwear on. So that has to be, like, the joke that everybody knows and is already told. And
yeah.
I don't know. It's just not... It's not inventive, so I'm not buying the next one of this.
Yeah, no, I'm not. In fact, I don't even think I'll keep the copy I bought.
My God.
What are you going to do with it? Shred it?
I'm going to burn it.
And so, like...
In effigy.
And you know what's funny is that, you know, Transmetropolitan, I'll go back, is one of my favorite sort of runs of any book ever.
That's a great book.
Hugely fan, but there was so much more to it than there is to this book, or anything I've read out of him for a long time. It was very dense, and there was a.
It almost
big
feels like he
plot.
Won't go deep in him anymore. It's all very see all the stuff he writes now.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely. Fulton is very deep.
Did either of you guys pick up the new Sensational Spider-Man?
No.
No.
Really?
No.
Yeah.
No.
I don't know why I decided. I was like, I haven't read a Spider-Man book outside of this in a while.
You pick now to start doing it?
Well, I did not pick it up, but I did pause and look at it, probably for the same reason why you picked it up, because the cover did catch my eye.
It's a really good cover.
Yeah.
What was the cover?
It's the guy. Basically, he does McFarlane. I mean, it's what it is. The artist does McFarlane.
You think we'd be beyond that?
I guess. Yeah. So I always loved that. I guess is my one soft spot. I loved McFarlane Spider-Man. It's what made me fall in love with comics when I was a kid. But I'd also read somewhere like this is a new team because I heard the last one was absolutely horrible, and I just thought,
terrible.
Well, I'll try. I'll give it the first try. You know, I'll give
Who
it the
is
first
it?
Issue a try. Robert Aguirre Sacasa.
Oh, he's great. He's the one who's been writing Four, the Marvel Knights Fantastic Four book that I love.
It's okay, but I don't think it's started yet. And Angel Medina is the artist. Yeah, and like so I heard that the writer was good, and they...
Oh,
totally
and Angel Medina is straight out of McFarlane's studio. So.
Yeah, and that, you know what, that doesn't bother me, because like if there's any title that McFarlane's stuff fits with, I don't mind it in this stuff. I loved those Spider-Man.
Is it like crazy webs going everywhere, and... Peter's hips above his head when he's swinging.
There's a lot of really crazy angles. There's a lot of like textures and fabrics, lots of lines, and you know, very detailed little drawings. And the faces are exaggerated and everything. It's a little inconsistent. It's not as precise as
you know. Back when McFarlane was doing Spider-Man, that was a great time to be a kid reading comics.
Oh God, yeah. Wasn't it? But you know, it was okay. I was really hoping. I'm like, it'd be great if this was really good. But I am gonna buy the next one. I'm gonna give it another couple of issues.
Oh, look at you getting a Spider-Man book.
I felt like it after. I'm telling you, after I read that New Avengers trade, I'm really in the mood for it. I keep hoping for it to be good, but obviously my standards are very high.
Little did I know what would happen after you bought that book.
You started in a bad ball rolling there.
Yeah,
right?
Just take a taste, kid. Well, the problem is that there's nothing to back it up.
The first one's free. Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Yeah, there's nothing to back it up, which sucks. But and that's what really bothers. For some reason, especially with the New Avengers, I noticed how, one of the things that kind of annoyed me about Marvel in the past couple of years has been like, you know, four issues of a book came out, and the next week the trade was out. And I know we always go back and forth on the trades versus single issues, and I'm more pro single issues, and you guys are kind of more leaning towards trades. I don't want to talk about that, but I'm just saying that always kind of bothered me, where it's like if you just wanted to put it out as a trade so badly, just put it out as a trade. But for some reason, with these New Avengers stuff, what they've been doing is they waited like 6 months, and then they put out a hardcover, and then they wait out 4 months later, and then put out the paperback version.
Well, so they probably make a ton of money.
Absolutely. I mean, that's probably what's driving it, but it's frustrating when you just want to turn somebody onto a book, and you just want the trade to be out. You know?
And the other thing, though, is that you know that in the background of everything, everybody at Marvel, no matter what anybody says, all the people behind the money desks are going, oh God, I hope speculation comes back.
Yeah.
I want
Well, they were all buying jets back then.
Yeah. Well, I saw Joe Quesada's apartment in Wired, and he's not doing too shabby.
Yeah, and I think he's got a problem.
Jeez.
Ron, did you buy Justice League?
Yeah, I did.
Well, not so much about the story, because that was just a terrible storyline, but...
Okay.
Did you see at the end that it said that Justice League is ending?
No, I didn't.
That was the final issue.
Was it? Jeez, yeah, talk about out with a whimper.
So they're rebooting it like the other
God.
Yeah, there will be no Justice League 126. That's what it says at the end.
I didn't even... Oh, yeah, so on the cover it says the end of the JLA, yeah. There will be no 126.
I know you're annoyed by that.
Nah, I don't care.
He doesn't care about the Justice League, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care. It's not uncanny, so I'm fine.
Right.
I mean, whatever.
About the Flash a couple weeks ago.
Because I don't have an emotional attachment to JLA. If it was Morrison still doing what
JLA
he did
was
back when it started. But let's be honest. JLA as a book has not been a good book since before issue 100.
Agreed.
So, yeah, I mean, sure. I don't really think we're losing anything. And if they've got something bigger planned with this 1 year later, 52 stuff, then bring it on.
Well, the rumor is that it's Meltzer.
Meltzer, yeah. That would,
really?
Okay, and you can
I'll
kiss,
buy that.
And you can kiss a monthly book goodbye.
Why?
Because he had Identity Crisis, like, written and in the can, and even that wasn't monthly, right? Didn't that come out, like, almost, you know, every 2 months or every 6 weeks or whatever?
Maybe they did that on purpose.
It's going to be the same thing as, you know, why don't you put Kevin Smith on Green Arrow again?
Well, that was, no.
Those were good, though.
Those were good.
God, but, I loved Phil Hester's art, too. Again, yeah. That's that style, but...
Yeah.
That wasn't the writer's fault, necessarily.
Was JLA ever really good after Morrison left it?
There were moments.
Yeah, right, but that was all there was. Yeah. Like, there was not a run again. I think Mark Waid was on a little while, and they're like, now Mark Waid!
And I think Busiek did some stuff, and when Ron Garney was drawn,
Is Busiek done?
No.
No?
No,
you know what I mean.
He's actively involved in all this 52 stuff, isn't he? Isn't he exclusive to DC now, or...?
Yeah,
he's doing Aquaman.
Yeah.
And he's doing Superman.
Yeah.
He's doing one of the
good, though?
Yeah.
Well, I don't mean
I don't
retired.
Know. They're coming out.
What you mean is, can he do anything good anymore?
Yeah.
Yes, he did that really good series. What was that? That sci-fi series with... it wasn't superheroes. It was what was it called? With the dragons, and it was all sorcery. It was really good.
Oh.
So good you can't remember the name.
Aerosmith. Yeah. That was really good.
I just realized what that name was, because that's the first time I've said it out loud.
Aerosmith, yeah.
That's
I mean, even though it was delayed as all hell, but put them all together, and the last arc, Astro City, was still gold. I mean, for some reason, I mean, I don't know why he's doing anything but that, because that stuff would probably sell.
Because it doesn't sell.
I'm surprised it doesn't sell.
When he was doing, like, when they put, in the late 90s, when they put him on, like, I think it was Avengers for a while, and he was on...
Well, yeah, that was the big Avengers relaunch when it was him and Perez.
That was so good.
Hang on, because it was so good, but yet, what did that give us? Triathlon and the Triune Understanding, and I remember it got all wonky, and I dropped it.
It was all really good up to that point, though.
Right, exactly.
And that was
everybody's allowed a bad story, man.
They had it and lost it.
That's the universal.
Yeah, I guess.
Sick Boy's unifying theory.
Yep.
But. Jeff Johns, who we talked about on the board, and Kurt, they're paring down the Superman line to two books, and those guys are doing the two books.
Johns confuses me.
So they're giving the Superman books the X-Men treatment?
Yes.
Nice.
Yes. Why does Jeff Johns confuse you?
Wait, what's the X-Men treatment?
We're going to trim down the books.
Oh. Like there was ever not enough X-Men books.
Well, they say that every, like, 2 or 3 years. They cancel books left and right, and they're going to trim it down and focus on these, and then a year later you've got more books.
Right.
Than you originally started with.
Well, Jeff Johns, you know, there's been bits where he showed a lot of promise. I don't think he's done his great thing yet. I think The Flash was really good, but I don't think it was great.
Well,
and then there's other stuff that he's done that's just been awful.
Some people would say that the Green Lantern Return was his greatness, was his great stroke.
He said that in that interview. He said Green Lantern 4, I think. I really liked Rebirth, too. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I'm talking not the ongoing, because the ongoing's been shit, but the Rebirth.
Well, yeah, that's the other part of it.
The ongoing is the only thing of his I've read that I haven't liked. So
agreed.
He's had a great run in terms of quality. He may not have had the great run yet, but he's still young. He's had a lot of runs.
He's been way more consistent than other people. I mean, these first four issues of Green Lantern have been the only anomaly. And this stuff he did at Marvel before he went exclusive to DC was great.
Yeah, but he's a solid B student.
No, I wouldn't say that's true. He's a B plus A minus student.
Yeah, I think that's more accurate.
Okay, all right.
Everything barring the weird Green Lantern thing.
And I'm admittedly I'm biased because I think his Flash run was great. I mean, it was enough for me to just randomly walk up to him in San Diego and just thank him and shake his hand and say, you know, like, because it was just great. And if
at that point he said thanks a lot, and he looked side to side and he ran the other way.
No, we had a nice little conversation.
Was this after Josh said thank you for sending him a letter? Was that the only one that didn't thank Jeff Johns at the convention?
Who did that to me? Jeff Loeb couldn't get away from me fast enough. The person who really couldn't get away from me fast enough was Paul Dini.
Yeah.
Who just looked so freaked out, like, oh god, leave me alone. Oh god, leave me alone.
Was that the year of the Paul Dini watching him throughout the entire con?
Okay, that sounded weird, and I'd like you to explain that.
No, do you remember who was with me when we were sitting?
No, it was you and me. We saw him.
Yeah,
we walked down a hall.
We're waiting to go into a panel. I believe it was the Terry Moore panel.
It was.
And we see Paul Dini, because he's a big guy. You can't miss him. And he just walked very pointedly as if he was looking for someone or something. And he went into one of the meeting rooms, and then he came back out, and he stopped and he looked, and he went into the bathroom, and then came back out. Obviously, he didn't go to the bathroom.
He says pointedly, though. It's important to picture, like, he rightly marched in. He was like, I'm on my way here. I'm going here.
Yep.
And then he sort of stopped and turned around and went the other way with exactly the same gusto.
Exactly, exactly. And to this day, I don't know what he was doing, but he was like that for the rest of the con every time I saw him. He just walks with this sense of direction that honestly I respect.
If I was the security people, I would have checked to see if he planted the bomb.
Yeah, it was really sketchy. I mean, and the funny thing was is that it was like contained over a 20-minute period where we were just sitting there waiting to get into this panel, and we're just watching it, because he had, like, a bright Hawaiian shirt on or something, right? And
yeah.
We're just
a lot of the comic writers are into giant, loud shirts.
That's true. That is a weird phenomenon.
Yeah. I don't know what that is about, but it's tons of them.
I will say this, Josh, that Ron and I had a good time watching you talk to Jeff Loeb.
Yeah, that was fun.
Watching you going, oh, he doesn't want to be talking to Josh. Oof. He wants to get out of there. Look at that. He wants to go.
I wasn't conscious of that.
It was so apparent that we could tell
across
the DC. I
still had to do it, though.
Oh, God.
I had to try.
I think Jeff Loeb, I think I did my awkward talking to thing with Jeff Loeb where I was getting, I think he was sitting next to Dave Gibbons to do sketching, and I just went, so, Commando. and he just kind of nodded and went, yep. And I just said, nice. Just like, I love doing that to pseudo-famous people. I did that to, when I went to, this is off of comics, but when I went to, Mets Yankees game before the game, I went to a Keith Hernandez card signing, and it was right around when he was on Seinfeld, and so I went up to get my card signed, and I just went, and it was kind of quiet, and he's like, what's your name? I'm like, oh, Ron. And he's like, yeah. I'm like, so, Seinfeld. And he's just like, yep. And I just kind of nodded creepily, and then I just walked away.
I remember that sort of when I was, that's how I met Mike Carey when I was in at the thing, because he was sort of standing there all by himself, like he was sitting at the Vertigo desk, and he's not a penciler. And people don't really pay attention to the writers, and you know, it's not like a huge writer. He's sort of standing there, and he looked kind of sad, and I was like, Lucifer's really good. Oh, thanks, you want an autograph? And I was like, sure.
You know, there have been a couple of people who I've seen at the cons, which I always thought was a great idea, where they go up to the writers and ask them to write a page of a story and, like, build upon a story in somebody's sketchbook and then go to the artist and have them kind of draw, you know what I mean, like kind of a collaborative type thing. And the writers that I've seen do it always get excited. They're like, oh, yeah, great. And then they go off and then they come back and, like, you know, it's like that's kind of fun to involve
them. Yeah, that's asking a lot.
Yeah.
A long time ago when I was when there was still big cons in New York, back when Marvels came out, this was, when was that, 90?
92, 93.
1978 when I was 1 year old. I went to the con, and this was back before people would go with sketchbooks and things, and so we had, like, backboards people would draw sketches on that we had with us, and there was a big long line for Kurt Busiek and Alex Ross. This was literally soon after Marvels came out, and my friend and I went up to them, and I think at that point Alex Ross was so tired of sketching that Kurt did the sketch and Alex did the dialogue balloon, which I thought was cool.
That's cool.
Kurt can't draw, but it was just cool that it was a rudimentary drawing of a character, but it was cool.
It's the kind of thing where I think these guys like to be surprised.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Because it gets monotonous when Steve Dillon draws, you know, Cassidy's head 18 times in a row
with a ballpoint pen, by the way. I love that man. I honestly love him.
And a four-day shadow.
I love that man so much.
It's true. They get tired of drawing the same thing over the same thing over. I've seen them get kind of, you know, excited by an offbeat request.
Yeah, yeah.
I had Scott Collins draw me a Flash boot once. He was totally excited about it.
Like, well, didn't he want to charge you for a sketch?
He did, but I said, "Can you just draw me the boot?" He's like, "What do you mean?" I go, "You know, the Flash boot with the ridges." He's like, "That's it?" I was like, "Yeah." Drew the boot. He was happy about it.
Well, that's like to this day, Mike Oeming. I mean, my whole Mike Oeming thing, with the powers thing. When we went in 2001, and I asked him for a power sketch, and for some reason, he just gave me Walker's forehead and eyes, and which I'm opening up right now just to kind of look at it and remember it. But And then 2002, I went and I said, you did this last year. Can you just do a mouth? And he laughed. And he's like, yeah. So he just drew a mouth all 2002 under it. And then in 2003, I went back. I'm like, can you give me a chin and an ear, maybe? And so he did the chin and the ear. And so every time I see him at a con, I'm going to bring this and have him expand on the drawing. So,
Tales from the con.
Oh, yes.
We know where this is going to end up eventually, so we might as well stop.
Let's do some viewer mail. We have any viewer mail. Well, not viewers, because we're not actually...
Listener mail.
Viewed. Listener mail.
We got one from our first Canadian Frapper Mapper.
That's right, people.
Yeah, Steve from Ottawa.
He took up the challenge, but of course Ottawa is right there on the east coast of Canada, so it's kind of
yeah,
like...
Yeah, what we really need is, you know, Saskatchewan, people.
We need the western provinces.
Yeah, we need Vancouver, we'll
Although,
take that.
Although, did you see it?
What?
Minnesota.
Yes.
Oh, I was so happy.
And didn't he have a statement about what they're called, the flyover land or something like that?
Well, the flyover states, they all
flyover
are.
States. Because
we fly over them when we go to see each other.
And we pay no attention when we
exactly
liberal politics and gay marriages on the coasts.
Anyway, so Steve wrote in, and he loves the podcast and likes what we're doing, so that's always nice. He wanted us to explain to him why he's been seeing ads in Marvel Comics advertising the Flash DVD. The past couple of months. And then he's asking, doesn't Warner Brothers have exclusivity with DC? If so, why would Marvel advertise WB no less the Flash?
Well, I've got a completely uneducated guess.
So do I.
My uneducated guess would be twofold. For Warner Brothers' part, it would be they'd want to get in front of as many eyes as possible in their audience group, and that means advertising with rival comic companies. Mm-hmm. And from Marvel's point of view, they're not turning down any advertising.
Well, yeah, no. I think you're right about the second one. I don't think you're right about the first one because technically they're not running DC ads. They're running Warner Brothers video ads.
Right, but I'm saying if you're going to be territorial would be that...
But the thing is that...
If it's The Flash, though, it's clearly a DC property.
Right, but they ran Batman Begins ads through Marvel Comics all throughout the year.
Punisher ads in the DC comics.
Right, yeah. The latter aspect of what you said is how they'll print any ad. DC would print any ad, too. I mean, it's not something where...
No, absolutely.
The pot of money that you're talking about for comic books has got to be very tiny compared to the advertising budget for a major release. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
The people who are advertising Daredevil comics probably... the Daredevil movie for a DVD, you know?
Or Elektra.
They're like, we're going to put this wherever we're going to put this all over the place. And, you know, who cares? But they don't care about the comics. It doesn't even matter to them.
Right. And the comic companies, they want to fill pages. And
they just want eyes. And the advertisers just want the eyes.
And also, as somebody who, you know, in my real life is in the marketing kind of world, a lot of times companies, ad agencies or companies will buy ad space not knowing what they're going to advertise.
True.
And so what happens, and quite often companies will sell ad space not knowing what they will be getting, the ads they'll be getting for, and a lot of times they'll make commitments about numbers of impressions and number of ads they'll print. That's why, I don't know if anybody, you know, you guys don't read Marvel as much as I do, but if you notice towards the end of last year, the last 3 months of Marvel books were just packed with ads. More so than in a while, because they're getting close to the end of the year and they had all these commitments that they had to fill, so they were just filling the back pages with ads. On a similar bent, you know, Warner Brothers Home Video, they've got all this stuff to sell, and it happens to be right now their product is the Flash DVD, which, by the way, we strongly recommend because it's got John Wesley Shipp.
That was a great show.
It was a great show. So,
have you guys noticed just the absolute abhorrent state of ads in comic books lately?
Don't get me started.
Well, like I remember, and it, you know, the worst place is in Ultimate Spider-Man. Because the people doing it have no idea. I really think that the people placing the ads are not paying attention to where they're putting things. Because you'll have one page, you'll have like an ad for the like a really crappy Spider-Man fishing pole. And then there'll be a really cheaply not well thought out ad for like Zit Cream or something like that.
And don't even get me started on the Human Torch Halloween costume kid.
Exactly.
Which to this day I have nightmares about.
No, we'll put ads in the comics.
Yeah,
the kids in the comics love that. They'll be buying the Human Torch kit,
right? Which is like, I mean, nobody's. And have you seen the Hanes Wolverine boxer ad?
Oh,
it's painful.
I've seen it in Vertigo books, and I think it's been in other books. Is the FBI automatically accusing you of being a criminal ad? Have you seen that one?
No, which one is that?
It's if you, it's not so much now. Probably a few months ago, 6 months ago, there was these ads that the FBI was putting in. I think it was the FBI, but it was the anti-piracy one.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Basically, straight out calling you a thief.
Yeah.
You stealing is a crime. When you steal things on the internet, and it was like in print, not really in parentheses, but like, and you know you are. It was this big you're a thief, horrible thing. It's like the stamp they put on CDs now.
You know what I found really interesting, though? Because I'm flipping through the last 2 weeks of books, and I'm just looking at the ads. Flipping through, X Factor and Powers. There's not one ad in Powers. And I know it's their created own imprint, but it's still Marvel. Mm-hmm. There's one ad, which is for their two ads. The back cover is for the hardcover of Powers, and the inside cover is for Emmings.
Those aren't ads.
Other
those
books.
Are just...
Yeah, those are, trade ads, which I think, interesting.
The movies and the movies and the video games, those ads make sense. That's fine. This Next Wave has got ads for Honda Elements, which is, that's correct. That's who they should be advertising to.
Yeah, and I've seen an increase in video game ads.
I'm sure that's their bread and butter right now.
Yeah. But it is interesting that even though, Steve brings up, an interesting point, though, is that I wonder... And I'm trying to look now through my DC and my Marvel books because Marvel's got this Ultimate Avengers movie out, and yet I don't think that ad's appearing in any DC books. So it's interesting. I don't know.
I bet there's I bet the Fantastic Four DVD advertised everywhere. And,
yeah.
From the same token, you get a lot of ads for the DC cartoons.
But they're not DC cartoons. They're Warner Brothers cartoons.
Right, but I'm saying is the properties are DC properties.
But they're not. They're not DC properties. They're Warner Brothers.
Well, listen though, they still serve as
marketing
for DC properties.
They're not in Marvel books. You get the cartoon ads in DC books, and you get the DVD ads in Marvel books. They're still splitting it in that sense.
Possibly.
I want to know how many people go to the Joe Kubert School, because they've advertised in every issue of every comic book I've
bought. Well, I think the most recent ad has got a list of alumni, which is pretty impressive, actually.
Yeah.
So.
Lots of people went there.
But,
it's a mail-in course.
Anyway, so Steve had a second question. I don't know if we answered that, but I mean, honestly, I don't think we know. Maybe we can track down somebody in the advertising department of Marvel who can answer it for us.
My thing is, I think it's too big, and I'm guessing the people who do advertising don't care. You
want
an ad? Sure.
And the people doing the printing don't care either. They just want to print it and get it out some semblance close to the right release date. So, I don't know. I don't think we'll ever answer it. So, but the second question was he wanted to know what our thoughts on Deadly Genesis were. And am I the only one reading that?
What is that?
Probably, because I don't know what that is.
That is X-Men Deadly Genesis, the miniseries that Brubaker is writing for the X-Men before he takes over Uncanny.
I'm going to buy his Uncanny, but I'm not going to go into the other stuff.
They gave it a dumb name. I'm not buying it.
I mean, I've read every issue so far, and I remember thinking about the first issue, and I think it was one of those weeks where wow, if this was my pick of the week, I probably would have picked it, because it really blew me away. Like, that was what kind of gave me hope for Brubaker coming onto the book.
I can believe that, though. He's really good.
Because he was really good. It's gotten, we're into the third or fourth issue, and it's gotten not as good, but I don't think that's because it's bad. I think it's just because we're building, and I don't know where everything's going.
I think he starts off strong a lot, and then sometimes he loses interest.
Yeah, and it's getting a little more drawn out than I would like. I'd like the action kind of pick up, but I know, be patient and it'll all pay off. But the big notable thing is that they killed Banshee, which...
Really?
Yeah, which,
More Irish.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Irish on Irish crime. I don't know what that means. That doesn't mean anything.
But Deadly Genesis, I like it. I'm buying it. I'll keep on buying it, and hopefully Steve's buying it too, and he likes it, or maybe he doesn't like it, and there's some sort of controversy I'm missing, and he was hoping we'd talk about it, but I missed it, so.
Now, is a title like that good? Because I hear that title, and it instantly turns me off. And maybe that's just I don't like that kind of book that they would name stuff that, but,
I don't think it's bad. I think it's generic.
Maybe that's it.
I think it's got something to do with something that's going to happen that I don't know about.
Well, if that happens, that's fine. But I feel like a lot of titles, not doesn't specifically, but it's like they throw two words together. This sounds good. This sounds good together.
Well, here I'm gonna throw around a compliment right now. I think one thing that Warren Ellis does really good is he has really good titles. He has little short, punchy titles that sell well. The title makes it sound modern and fresh.
Okay.
No, but Fell and, I think Red or all these colors or things like that. I don't know. That just seems modern to me. It seems like a good way to go. And, Deadly Genesis, Neon Evangelists, whatever.
Hey, nothing can beat X-Men The End, Book 3, Men and X-Men. So exhausting to even say.
It's the best title of the year.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
100 Bullets. You know, good
That's
title.
A good title.
It is. It's a great title. It was a great book for a long time.
It still got you by the scrotum, though.
God. You know what? I almost didn't buy this one, and because it's issue 70, I think, and it was part 2 of 2. And here it is. That was my last issue. I'm done.
Wow!
You're proclaiming it now on the podcast that you're done.
Yes, I am.
You know, I'll join you because as much as I liked the Aguirre Sacasa writer guy, the Marvel Knights Fantastic Four book 4 hasn't been good for a long time, and I think this week was the last book I'll pick up on that one too. Okay. So,
well, I've been buying.
I got nothing.
That's 70 issues of 100 Bullets, and see at the beginning, it was this really neat idea where you would show up in somebody's life, and you say, "I have this gun," and the bullets, and you get 100 bullets, and each of the bullets is completely untraceable. So no matter what you do with it, you will not be held responsible. And then they would give the person all this evidence of somebody in their life who wronged them horribly. And so the person was faced with a choice of, what do I do? And it was really well done. The first, like, probably 20 or 30 issues were like that. And in the background was this sort of big world conspiracy thing going on. And it was kind of there and whatever. And then since 30 and 40, like, it's just all been this really confusing world conspiracy thing. And they're not doing the 100 Bullets thing anymore.
No more moral quandary.
The thing that really made me like the book is completely gone.
They lost sight of the concept.
Totally.
So,
I think we've wrung all the life out of comics this week.
Yeah.
And there wasn't much to wring.
It was a kind of a slight week, but those are going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to worry.
If there's anything else that we should have picked up, let us know. I said
Ron?
I have an ad there.
Yeah, absolutely. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com and let us know what you thought or what you want our opinions on. And
or if you want to give us any more questions to discuss in the air, because we like discussing viewer.
Exactly. We like we're interacting with you folks. You know, this is a give and take. So.
How's the map doing, Ron?
The Frapper map is doing well. We broke 50 today, right, or yesterday?
Yesterday.
Although
I don't trust number 48.
Well,
if you're that chick band from England, email us. I want to know that you're actually on the site and not just spamming us to go to your MySpace page. That's what I want to know.
So that's
sorry.
That's our challenge, okay. but yeah, we had a lot of Frapper representation, you know, including Canada, and we had Minnesota, and where else, Connor? I'm blanking.
Virginia, right?
I believe so.
And yeah. Oh, Austria.
Right.
And
oh,
he
yes,
said, I like
one.
Listening to the podcast, or you know, so he's listening to it. He's not
continuing
just
our European dominance.
Yes, it was. It wasn't in broken English, though. I was hoping that it would be.
Well, he might talk if he spoke in English.
Yeah, he said, nice podcast from Vienna, Austria. Would I, 666.
Which is awesome. And he's Satan also, so that's nice.
Yeah, and we
still got that going for me.
And the guy with the Dr. Pepper box on his head just wrote, "Yeah, well, it's cool," and I'm guessing he's talking about the Dr. Pepper box. So.
You know
George Kelly Johnson in Texas. So
we kind of made fun of him.
Well, I didn't mean. I just thought it was funny.
It was lighthearted. It was. Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was.
You put a Dr. Pepper on your head, Dr. Pepper box on your head. You have to endure the slings and arrows.
You'll get commented on.
And Popmatic in Columbus, Ohio, gave a little shout out to his comic book store, The Laughing Ogre. So
well, I've heard that store before.
I have too.
Oh,
interesting. I've never heard of it. So
oh, it's supposed to be a really good store.
Cool.
It is.
Yeah, so it was a good week for the Frapper map. So keep it up. But folks, you zoom into America and you see that we got that, you know, effect happening still. So we need
Dakotas are still just saying no.
Dakotas, Kansas, Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, we need you.
How about somebody in the Seattle region?
Yeah, or Alberta.
The Pacific Northwest, you're cool people. You read comics, it's raining, what are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly. And we still don't have Africa or South America.
We kind of had South America. We just
well, we had somebody email us from South America, but he didn't go to the pin thing, so
that's
unfortunately. True. I'd really like to get somebody from the Congo.
Hey, on a special note.
Yes.
I'm looking for a comic book artist. So if you happen to be listening to this, and you're interested or like have some experience and have drawn, you know, comics and know what you're doing, I'm looking for like I'm doing a style of book that is sort of like I just, in the vein of A Box Office Poison or Strangers in Paradise, like a real life sort of thing. It's not fantasy, it's not sci-fi. And that's all. So you drop me an email if you think you can. If you want to send me some samples or anything like that, I'll let you look at some of the script. You can send it to josh@ifanboy.com, and I've totally pimped myself on this podcast.
Gee, Ron, do you have anything to self-promote?
Not really. I have some steak knives that I'm looking to sell, but
I just
go to Craigslist. But you know,
after fame and fortune, you know, I'll drop you two losers in the dust, far behind.
It's good to know. Good to know. Hey, you know, but you know, we'll always have I don't know, the Planet of Women, and
we'll always have
Paul Dini
and Hobo Man
and Eddie Campbell.
All right, go to ifanboy.com. Check it out. Email us. Contact at ifanboy.com. frappermap.com/ifanboy.
He totally stopped us from going on just about nothing. Spell you.
frappr.com/ifanboy, or go to ifanboy.com and click it in the upper right hand corner.
See ya.
Fantastic.
You read that a little like a radio DJ.
And we're back!
Corner. And we're back!
I need a cowbell or something.
It's so hard not to go into a radio voice when you're doing this, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, when you do the intro and you're like, hi, welcome to iFanboy, you like, you don't want to sound like you're selling Toyotas, but it's so hard not to.
Yeah.
Oh, and then the other option is to sound like you're on really bad college radio. That was the Meat Puppets with Lake of Fire.
Oh, boy.
And some other albums.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened, because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.